The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this exclusive edition of Sports Talk 1240 on opening day 2016. We've got a great show for you lined up tonight. Obviously, we will talk baseball as the New York Mets are currently underway against the Kansas City Royals. And the Yankees begin their season tomorrow at home against the Houston Astros. And speaking of Houston, ESPN radio reporter Tyreek Butler will be joining us to discuss the Final Four in Houston, as well as discuss some baseball. But before we begin, I'd like to inform you that tonight's show is brought to you by Sportopoly. For those of you that don't know, Sportopoly is a sports podcast that me and Tyreek put out about once a week or so on SoundCloud. So if you like what you hear, you can follow Sportopoly Pod on Twitter. That's at Sportopoly Pod on Twitter, and check it out. So, it's opening night. Opening day, rather. Opening night. It's confusing because it's nighttime and there's still baseball. How hard is it just to have one day where all the baseball games occur? Is it really that difficult to have one stinking opening day for all of baseball? But regardless, because of opening day, I'd like to read to you a poem by Bill Burns. It was written in 2001, and I just felt it was powerful and fulfilling for the folklore of opening night and opening day baseball. So, without further ado, it's literally just called Baseball Poem. So here's Baseball Poem Opening Day by Bill Burns. And again it is time, and you know it. Without looking at the calendar, you know it's the time, because you can smell it in the air and feel it on your neck and back. You hear the rising voices of the young as they begin again to toss the ball around. So, you get ready one more time for that first trip to the park to see the boys play the game again. It's baseball. Not more than life, but pretty damn close. Something you can love, eat, breathe, taste, and hold on to. A language all its own that you can share with friends, your wife, your children, strangers even. And so you must go once again to feel and hold on to it, to savor and be hurt by it, to jump for joy and cry in deep despair, to make it a part of you before it's gone or you are. Perhaps that's dark and morbid at the end, but with life, we have baseball. Obviously, I got to give you an update on the Mets-Royals game. It's 1-0 Royals. I was streaming the game in the lobby. It has since closed down. I'll try and get that going again. Looks like I can reboot that here. I don't know. You can't trust streaming. Anyway, it's 1-0 Royals because It was so eerie. You know, it's the bottom of the first. The Mets went out 1-2-3 in the top of the first. It's the bottom of the first, and the Royals, the fans, the lineup, everyone's hopped up. And, of course, you know, because the Mets are playing the Royals, starting the season with interleague play is ridiculous, but that's besides the point. The Mets are playing the Royals. They show the World Series last year that the Mets lost in 5 games, and they, of course, showed the first pitch that Cespedes blooped in center field, quickly derailing Mets fans' hopes and dreams in what turned out to be a roller coaster of a World Series that very well probably should have been more than 5 games. But, of course, they're reapplying those memories, and they show you that play, and then what happens? No, 2 batters later, Cespedes, who's in left field tonight, bloops one that's right at him. And this one wasn't, you know, run and go get it. He was sitting there waiting for it, and errors happen. It's the beginning of the season, but you know Cespedes is under a grain of salt right now, a microscope right now. You know, it was almost mind-boggling to see that could happen again. Just 5 months ago this happened. So, I can't believe it, but that's how the game started. But you can't get too hung up on the beginning of a season, so looking at the Mets going into this entire season, you have to look at the key acquisitions. You got Neil Walker at second base, and Asdrubal Cabrera, who could play short. And, you know, I'm reflecting on the World Series of last year. I'm trying to look ahead to this year. I truly think they are going to miss Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy, you can't say enough about his clutch play and what he brought to the table, he really was more than what you saw on the field. People are comparing the numbers between him and Neil Walker. They have very similar numbers up and down. Neil Walker actually hits more home runs. But I can't allow myself to be that, to be able to just get rid of Daniel Murphy out of my mind like that, because, you know, he really was something special. And if you look at all these reviews, these season in reviews videos that include the Mets past this year, trying to pump you up for this year, because there's only been about 30 or 40 of those videos going out there. And I just think that, no, obviously none of them include Daniel Murphy, and I just think that that's wrong, because Murphy was such a vital part to that run, and just sweeping it under the table like it's no big deal that he's gone, to me that's foolish. Obviously it's a big deal they're able to re-sign Cespedes. I'm very happy about that. However, we need the Murph Man, and it's bothering me that Mets fans have, simply because he joined the Nationals, fail to realize that that's a pretty huge loss that they had to their team this year. Can Neil Walker handle New York? That's a pretty big question. Can he be as clutch as Daniel Murphy was? That's a pretty big question. I'm not trying to run Walker out of town, but it's one of those things that you got to see. Obviously, the Yankees play tomorrow at home against Houston. It's supposed to be pretty rainy and cold. Who knows what will happen with the game. Yankees' key acquisitions, the bigger ones are Starlin Castro and Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman is a relief pitcher, obviously suspended 30 games. He's more than likely going to be the closer when he comes back from suspension. Starlin Castro is a second baseman. He's young and up and coming, and he's got the big bucks, obviously, playing for the New York Yankees. A-Rod, right now, 687 home runs, needs 27 to surpass Babe Ruth. Ruth's 714 baseball home runs. Obviously, that's a Yankees record. It's a pretty sacred record at that. So, how do Yankee fans feel about him coming in on that type of historic mark? Mixed opinions. Many Yankee fans have forgiven A-Rod, but we'll see where that goes, and we'll see how Yankee fans respond to the potential of Alex Rodriguez closing in on Babe Ruth. The Final Four was last night. Villanova, 95. Oklahoma, 51. That was an insane blowout from Villanova. Oklahoma only shot 6 for 27 from the field. Buddy Hield, Naismith Trophy winner, was just 4 of 12 and 1 for 8 from 3. North Carolina defeated Syracuse. My buddy Tyrese coming on any second now. He is a huge Syracuse fan. He's at Syracuse right now. I said he works for ESPN. He's a radio host there, but trust me, he's going to be disappointed about the Syracuse game, and I can't wait to hear his take on that. North Carolina, 83. Syracuse, 66. Jim Boeheim was quoted today on the Full Court Press. He says, "I don't need to jump off the Empire State Building to know it's going to hurt, and I don't need to press Carolina to know it's going to hurt." Now, that to me was an interesting quote, because here we have a guy who was got in trouble last year. Every one of the players had came across the suspension for 9 games. 12 scholarships were taken away. The violations, which were self-reported by Syracuse and dated back to 2001, included academic misconduct, extra benefits, failure to follow the drug testing policy, and impermissible booster activity. Specifics were not released, but how severe could that punishment have been given how the team performed this season? And I have just the man to discuss that with, Tyree Butler. What's going on, man?
How's it going?
Good. Thanks for coming on to the show tonight. I'm assuming you got the Mets game on wherever you are.
Yes,
right
I do.
Now. What just happened? Did Cespedes really just drop that ball again? Did that really just happen?
I tweeted, I know this sounds ultra specific, but Yoenis Cespedes loves to drop balls in game ones in Kansas City. Doesn't it feel like that?
No. That is very specific, but it does feel like that. I just think he psychologically psychs himself out in these big moments. I can't fathom to understand what's going on in his mind, but it's almost hysterical.
He almost looks aloof, and as you just mentioned, he's like psyched out. He's so pumped up for being back on the field, fresh off that World Series loss, and it's a line drive hit pretty much right at him, and just takes his eye off of it for a second and drops it.
I know, and they're killing him in the broadcast booth. But I have some quick questions for you. Obviously, we want to dive into some sports talk, but I have some really, really important questions for you to start this off. Now, if you're a professional baseball player, what song would you come up to bat to? Because I'm hearing everyone's got their songs out there today, and I just, what would you pick?
It would have to, and I would be the type of person who would change my song like once every 2 weeks.
That's not a baseball thing, though. Baseball, you got to have that. That's like if you're on a hitting streak, you can't change it, you know, something like that.
Yeah, but I'm going to be the type of guy to establish my own pattern, you know. So I'm going to probably change my song every 3 weeks. But it has to be of the Jay-Z variety. Maybe like The Ruler's Back or Otis. I don't know if you're familiar with any of those songs, but it would definitely be Jay-Z.
I do know those songs. But, I mean, if you were on a New York team, would you do Empire State of Mind?
No, because that's pretty, you know, that's pretty basic.
It's very cliche.
Yeah.
But if you're a Jay-Z fan and you play for a New York team, I feel like you're almost obligated.
Yeah, but I'm a diehard Jay-Z fan.
Oh, I see.
But Empire State of Mind is just standard and basic. I want to go against the grain just a little bit.
All right. I like that. Also, very important question. It's been grueling at me. 40 years ago, the original Bad News Bears came out. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay. And how do you feel about the original Bad News Bears, first of all?
I thought it was pretty decent. Not one of my favorite movies. If you were to ask me which movie was my favorite in terms of sporting movies, I would have to go with either like Waterboy or Like Mike. Those are my types of movies.
Oh, so you like the comedies. You like to keep it light in the sports movie department. See, I was having this conversation with my dad about the original Bad News Bears movie, and he's a huge fan. And if you've played Little League or watched Little League, it's hysterical. Like it's. But I was talking to my dad. I was like, "Does it really hold up to the test of time?" I was like, "With the kids smoking and drinking and swearing," I was like, "It's a bit much today." And my dad was like, "Oh no, that's how the 70s were. Like it has to be that way." And I thought that was pretty telling. But I like the original Bad News Bears. The remake is disastrous. It's don't ever watch it if you have. I'm sorry that you had to do that. But your favorite is Like Mike. I think you're more of a basketball guy, so Like Mike's your favorite, right?
Yes, Like Mike, Waterboy. I would say those are like 1A and 1B.
See, Waterboy was back when Adam Sandler made funny movies. I mean, I didn't walk into this radio show thinking I was going to burn Adam Sandler, but it's true. He hasn't put out a funny movie since he was less famous, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his character in that movie. And then Like Mike, I was a huge Bow Wow fan growing up.
Right.
So it just appealed to my interest. And as you mentioned, I'm a diehard basketball fan. So
see, personally, I was conversation with my dad about sports movies. Personally, I'd have to go Rudy, number one. That's my number one all-time favorite movie because I love Sean Astin as an actor. And I just, it's such a good story. I'm not even a huge Notre Dame fan. It has nothing to do with that. It just has to do with his drive and his vision to live that dream. So, first of all, have you seen Rudy?
I have not.
Ooh, okay. See Rudy. All right. I'll just leave it at that. Watch Rudy. If you like football, you will appreciate what Rudy brings to the table. But I also.
I will add that to my list of things to do.
Okay, good. I know you're a busy guy, but you got to find time for this one. I really appreciate the remake of Invaders in the Outfield from when I was a kid. The one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who plays the young child, and JP said, "Hey, it could happen." I think that's like my version of Like Mike for you. Like that's my kid movie that I really, really like. That has its charming moments.
I would say I'm 0-2 now because
you haven't. Oh my god, dude, that's like a movie of our youth though. Like Rudy, I can understand because it predates us a little bit, but.
But is that sacrilegious on my part?
That's disappointing. It's upsetting. Okay, I guess we've digressed a little bit. I just wanted to keep things loose to start. But let's get right into it, shall we? I want to get your take on the Mets, okay? The other day I was listening to Haunted Humpty, and Bill Daughtry, who really enjoys trolling Rick DiPietro on that show, he pointed out that he felt that the Mets had no chance in the World Series last year. And Rick DiPietro almost flipped off the table. I was like, how could you say they had no chance? They were ahead 52 out of 57 innings of the game. The Royals had late inning comebacks every night. You know, all these stats were thrown out there that pretty much verified that the series was close, and I obviously agreed with Rick. But I had this belief that Mets fans wouldn't really agree with Bill Daughtry. And one after one, as the Mets fans call in, they're like, you're right, Bill, we had no chance. And I was astounded because I just couldn't believe that Mets fans had gotten that wishy-washy and that passive over the past 5 months. And the truth is, if Mets fans feel that they had a chance, it's a harder pill to swallow. You know, I think Mets fans have this natural ability to just play down a situation just to make themselves feel a little better just because they can't fathom all the heartbreaking losses they've had to put up with over the years. What's your take on that?
Mets fans, like Jets fans, love to wallow in their own misery. Just
yes.
Because if you think that you actually had a legitimate chance at doing something or being successful, then it hurts a little bit more. And there's this, like, a predetermined allergy to success. Like, you just can't have that just because it hurts so much. But I want to say that series, in my eyes, was tantamount to the Stanley Cup Finals a few years ago between the Rangers and the Kings, in which the Rangers actually had lead in every game and ultimately fell in five games. I would disagree with Bill Daughtry, who said the Mets had no chance, because it's just laughable to say something like that. As you mentioned, leading 52 of his 57 innings. I think going into it, I did pick Kansas City to win in six games just because I thought they had the better roster and overall from top to bottom, the better team. But like I said, I wholeheartedly disagree that the Mets had no chance.
Yes, it's crazy to say, but the more and more I saw I think that was Wally Garris putting down a bunt. It just went foul. That would have been special. I want to get to talking about Wally Garris, but that was a little distracting. But yes, Bill Daughtry, he was just Yankee fan, sour grapes. That was how I saw it. And quite frankly, I think it's hard to be a Mets fan. Being a Yankee fan is easy. I think it takes a special kind of person to be a Mets fan, someone that has to be stubborn, someone that has to understand that there's a real, real, real good chance that this team can let you down, and yet somehow blindly allow yourself to have hope regardless. That to me is being a Mets fan. But the Mets, as I mentioned in the opening of the show, the key acquisitions obviously are Neil Walker and Asdrubal Cabrera, and the departure is Daniel Murphy, who signed with the Washington Nationals. And I gotta ask you something: do you believe that Neil Walker will just fill in for Daniel Murphy like it's no big deal? Or do you think the Mets are going to really miss Murphy?
I think the Mets are going to miss Murphy's character. He was a consistent bat in the lineup, but I do think it's interesting that both of the players offensively are pretty similar. You look at Neil Walker's stats from last season, I believe he had 16 home runs with like 78 RBI. I think he has pretty similar statistics, and he is an upgrade defensively. So I think you will miss Daniel Murphy, the person in that locker room, the environment that was created in New York for the Mets, having him there. But I'm not sure you're going to really miss him in the field. And I know it sounds kind of like a prisoner of the moment take just because of what we saw with Daniel Murphy in terms of him making the errors in that World Series game.
Yes.
And the World Series and the whole series. But I don't think the Mets are going to miss him too much.
See, I'm gonna have to disagree. All right, that last part, maybe. You know, what do you say in the field? I think he caught a bad rep because he really wasn't a horrible second baseman. He had a rough time when he played outfield. It was almost laughable when he played left field. But when he was in the infield, I never thought he was horrific. I thought he was actually getting much better at playing the field. It just everyone has that lasting memory of the World Series where he just completely fell apart. But the whole team made errors. Cespedes, Duda, Darnot, it was a disaster from a defensive standpoint. So I just feel that Mets fans just jumped off the Murphy wagon so quickly. You know, he was a god up until the World Series. He has a bad World Series. He signed somewhere else, and everyone's just forget him. And I get that that's part of the business. I get that's how New York fans are. But I can't say enough about how clutch Daniel Murphy was, not only in the playoffs, but throughout the season. Even when the Mets were bad, you needed a clutch hit, a big game that probably no one was really watching, Murphy came through for you. So, Walker, I'm not going to say anything badly about the guy because I haven't watched him as closely as I have Daniel Murphy, but I feel strongly that it's not something that we can guarantee that Walker will just walk in and fill that void that Daniel Murphy did just because he happens to hit more home runs.
I love the wordplay, I'm going to say. Walker is going to just walk in and fill the void.
Yeah, you like that? That was That was unintentional. I'll be honest. No, I didn't write it down. I got a lot of stuff in front of me, but that had nothing to do with it. That was honestly bad. I shouldn't say Walker walked in. That's repetitive, right? I should use a different word. I should say strolled in.
It was pretty cool, but in my eyes, you wrote it down, or like you woke up in the middle of the night because you had thought it, thought about it, and decided to write it down because you thought it would be great for the show.
That'd be a better story, but it was just me stumbling around on my own words. And okay, let's get to the Yankees key acquisitions quickly. Obviously, the big ones, Castro and Chapman. As I mentioned before, Chapman's suspended for 30 games. What do you think about Starlin Castro? And he obviously got the big money. But I think he's a real promising kid. I think the Yankees got a great deal out of him.
It's a great deal. Anytime you hear about Adam Warren being traded, he's not a name that is really going to strike people because unless you're a Yankees fan or a real diehard baseball fan, just analyze every roster, you're not going to really know who he was. But he was one of the unsung heroes last year. It's duly noted the starting rotation troubles that occurred in the Bronx. He was able to come in, start, come out the bullpen. So I'm going to miss him tremendously, but Starlin Castro, a young stud, to begin his career, he had some issues with discipline, striking out a ton, but he's kind of neutralized that to some degree. And I'm really excited about the young double play combination between he and Didi Gregorius up the middle.
Yeah, now that's definitely an upgrade, and that's some real speed with him and Gregorius. But, you know, if you look at the Yankees in recent years, last year especially, they made the wild card and lost. They've been hanging around the playoff mark. They've made the playoffs a few times. But since that World Series in 2009, it's kind of been a lot of the same. And do you think it could be any different this year? Do you think those additions are enough? I'm not really sold on the starting pitching, as you and I have talked about on Sportopoly, which, by the way, this show is brought to you by Sportopoly. Follow Sportopoly on Twitter, at SportopolyPod. But is it going to be more of the same or something different for the Yankees?
I think when you look at the fact that this is a team that was second in the American League in runs scored last year, huge years out of Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez, then you look at the combination in that bullpen of Betances, Miller, and Chapman. That's a lethal three-headed monster. And it's more than likely going to be the best bullpen in all of baseball. And you did mention Chapman suspended for 30 games to start the season. So he's going to serve as like this in-season acquisition. And if you're a Yankees fan, you're just salivating at knowing these guys are no-contact pitchers. They throw hard, and they're going to rack up strikeouts. I guess the question marks are A-Rod at age 40. How is he going to produce? Mark Teixeira hasn't played a full season in four straight years. You know, what's going to come of that? And you don't have Greg Bird as a safety net, the young stud who came up last year to relieve Mark Teixeira, no pun intended, because he's out for the season. So there are a ton of question marks. I would just be a homer if I'm saying I can definitively see the Yankees being a great baseball team this year. But as I always mention on Sportopoly Pod, this is a team in baseball with the largest disparity in terms of best case and worst case scenario. If all the questions are answered in the affirmative, they're going to be a really good team. In the negative, it's going to be a long, hard season for Yankees fans.
Well, who can say anything definitively in April about baseball? So don't worry. You're not being a homer if you think the Yankees are going to be better this year. I think that's a pretty fair thing to think, especially with the additions. And like you said, they're following the model of the Royals with the bullpen. Maybe they won't be as dependent on their starters. Maybe they only need five or six innings out of their starters at the most. So it's really something to think about. Maybe, you know, the evolution of the game, small ball, good bullpen play from behind. People watch the World Series and they think, wow, I want to be like the Royals. That's how teams rebuild. That's how sports work. But I want to get to the Final Four. Obviously, you're at Syracuse, and I'm sorry to bring up the game from last night, but we got to talk about it. North Carolina 83, Syracuse 66. Jim Boeheim was quoted on his full court press decision towards the end of the game, in which North Carolina very well played against offensively. That is, they zipped and zigged and zagged throughout the full court press, really had no issue, and were at a point where Syracuse was trying to make a run. North Carolina was just trading hoops. So it unfortunately Syracuse's comeback bid was falling short. That real quick though, that's a base hit for Cespedes. We got runners on the corner, looks like. No, first and second. Mets have two out in the top of the third. Maybe something going on for the Mets. But like I said, Syracuse, how do you feel about Jim Boeheim's quote, and how do you feel about the game last night?
Well, he's made it pretty conspicuous. It's a full-court pressure defense that he's been reluctant to use because it doesn't really work in the grand scheme of things. You can look at how it ultimately helped you come back against Gonzaga and against Virginia, but this guy's been coaching for 40 years. He wants to play that 2-3 zone. He wants to set up in the half court to give his defense a chance to read the offense and not have to worry about trailing and having 3-on-2s and 2-on-1s and that type of thing. So he's made it clear. It's like a desperation move. And, yes, it has worked. But as you ascend the rankings in the tournament and you play better teams, we saw North Carolina break that press pretty easily. Like, it was not even affecting them at all. And the person I was watching the game with, I told them, it looks like they've been working on this all week because they had no issues. There was no trepidation at all. It just looked pretty simple and pretty easy.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think Boeheim actually revealed that he wasn't too sure the full court press was going to work in those other games. He might have put his cards in the middle of the table, went all in, and it worked out. And I think he realizes that his team was fortunate to be in this game in the first place. So hats off to Syracuse on an unbelievable run. Obviously, you had a lot of fun watching it. You had a lot of fun being there in Syracuse. And, I mean, what are the odds that your first year there as a grad school student, they go to the Final Four? You really – it can't get too much – obviously, you can get a little better, but it can't get too much better than that, Ty. And I'm glad you got to enjoy it. But
yeah, it's been remarkable. I got up here, and the football team, who has customarily been awful
– yeah.
Although they ended the season pretty poorly, they started off 3-0 for the first time in 25 years. Then you combine that with field hockey teams and soccer teams going to the Final Four. Now, for the first time in program history, we had both women's and men's basketball in the Final Four, and we got two pretty darn good lacrosse teams. So all this fun in Orange Land up here right now.
What's your secret? Do you walk around with a rabbit's foot? Do you keep a horseshoe in your pants? What did you do?
I'm not going to reveal anything that should not be revealed over the airwaves, but I will say I do think I have a little bit something to do with it.
I mean, obviously. I mean, it's a coincidence like that is no such thing. It ain't a coincidence. But I wanted to talk about the bigger picture. Okay, so I'm sitting at home. I'm watching the Syracuse game. I'm thinking maybe they can come back. And a lot of the times, you know, during timeouts or doing things like that, they'll pan and they'll show the crowd and they'll show how crazy the student section is. They'll show how crazy the band is and they'll show how crazy the cheerleaders are and, you know, you name it. But obviously they're playing in Houston, NRG Stadium, and has a capacity of 71,500 people, okay? That's a lot of people. And I just think that playing basketball, especially when it's not professional basketball, it's NCAA basketball, in a football stadium. And customarily, that's what you do in the Final Four. You play at a huge venue that can seat a ton of people, and they get as many people as they can to go to this game. If you're sitting in the upper deck of what is normally a football stadium, that's crazy to think that you could actually watch a basketball game. And I just think that maybe, just maybe, it's too much for these kids. The spotlight is too large. People are so wrapped up in their office pools and everything about college hoops that they're forgetting to see how outrageously large this has gotten. And yes, I'm not born under a rock. I understand it's a business. I understand how these things work. But seriously, I mean, did we all forget about the investigation that Syracuse came up last year? Are we forgetting about Jim Boeheim's suspension? Are we forgetting about all the things that weren't really revealed too specifically at what happened at Syracuse University? Because to me, it's obviously the punishment didn't mean much if they're able to go to Final Four next year. Not to say that I don't think they should have gone or anything like that. I'm not trying to be the sour grapes guy. I'm just saying that the NCAA is so huge and so vast, and you look at something like a football stadium at a college basketball game, some of these kids are 18. Do you ever think that it's too much, to really simplify my little rant there?
I don't think it's too much at all. It's a celebration of the brand, celebration of the game. You're giving back to the fans. You're allowing thousands upon thousands of people to come inside this arena, this stadium, just to enjoy the product that you're putting out in Florida. But I do want to go back for a minute to what you said about the suspension not really meaning anything, because I completely disagree. I think it's easy to look at the question, was the suspension hard enough, through a retrospective lens? But you can definitively say that it was harsh enough because you're losing a Hall of Fame coach, one of the greatest in NCAA history, for 9 critical games in which Syracuse managed to go 4-5 overall and only 3 in conference play. And then they ended up losing the next game to go to 0-4, and that's had the worst conference start in program history. So it did affect this team. And going into the tournament, they were 19-13. We haven't seen Syracuse perform this poorly in a while, so it did affect the team. But it's a direct testament to the greatness of one Jim Boeheim and what he's been able to do amidst all the adversity. Because despite having what I thought was a B-minus roster, like if you look at North Carolina and then you look at Syracuse,
yeah,
North Carolina has NBA-ready players. Syracuse, I think, has
Villanova
more than
too.
I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm talking about Mike Benajay, who was slated to go number 32 overall to the Lakers last time I checked NBA DraftNet. But you see the disparity in the talent on the roster. And I'm looking at Jim Boeheim and what he was able to, pardon the pun, squeeze every bit out of his orange. I'm saying it's a direct testament to how incredible he is as a coach. And I think the suspension did hurt the team because, as I mentioned, going 4-5 puts you in pretty much of a hole that you had to get out of. Now, Boeheim came back. They went on to win 8 of 10 games, so that kind of got them out of it a bit. But it was just Jim Boeheim's greatness that was everything to do with what Syracuse was able to have happen this season.
I have a challenge for you, and I'm going to put it on pause as we take a break here on Sports Talk 1240. But I have something that I think it's going to challenge your point pretty well. So I hope you sit there and you think of something good to come back with, because I'm ready to challenge you. We'll be right back here on Sports Talk 1240. Don't go anywhere, Tyreek. Don't go anywhere, fans, if you're listening. Mets down 1-0 against Kansas City here on opening night of the MLB 2016 season.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines. Also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240. Tyreek, I have a challenge on your previous point about Syracuse basketball and their suspension, but you ever realize you did something dumb? I mean, obviously you have, but My point is, I realized I did something dumb. I never mentioned my name. My name's Anthony Beers. I'm hosting this edition of Sports Talk 1240, and it is brought to you by Sportopoly Pod. I didn't even say my name, dude. That's crazy, isn't it?
You got the Joanna Cespedes jitters.
Yeah, I Cespedes'd the intro of this show.
You dropped a fly ball.
I dropped a fly ball. Totally dropped a fly ball. And I'm going to listen to it again. I'm going to hate myself at the beginning because I was stammering a little bit there. But I'm loose now. I'm good. And I'm ready to challenge you, Tyree, because let's face it. How can you accurately say that Syracuse got what they deserved? It was a strong enough suspension or frankly, affected them enough, which is the impression I was getting from what you were saying, because the specifics weren't released. All it says were violations that were self-reported by Syracuse dated back to 2001, including academic misconduct, extra benefits, failure to follow the drug testing policy, and impermissible booster activity. Jim Boeheim himself said, "We did not cheat, but we did break the rules." So no one knows what that means. No one knows how specific that was. No one knows if that was significantly a part of their championship run with Carmelo Anthony back in the day. I'm not trying to challenge the entire Syracuse organization because, frankly, I understand all major schools are cutting corners, doing little things here and there. It's part of the NCAA. And like I said previously in the show, I don't live under a rock. And I'm not trying to be that guy that's just angry and frustrated about everything. But when we don't know what exactly happened with Syracuse, how can we say that everything's fine and dandy?
But how much more specific do you want them to get?
Well, what do they tell you? They take juice? Who took juice? They make money? Who made money? How much money? You know what I'm saying? How did they recruit? Academic misconduct? Are they going to class? Are they doing anything? You know what I mean? I have a lot of questions, actually.
He got suspended 9 games. Which
that's nothing.
That's nothing.
That's not a lot.
This man had just finished winning the Battle for Atlanta tournament, and initially, as part of the suspension, he was going to be gone for 9 ACC games. But after further ruling, they decided 48 hours prior to the next game, they were going to unceremoniously hand him this suspension and say, oh, by the way, effective immediately. So I think that was pretty harsh. And also, the basketball program had to vacate 108 wins, which I think is just ludicrous. Like, how are you just changing history? How are you subtracting wins? That doesn't make sense. It doesn't do anything.
I'm with you on that. It doesn't make sense. I'm with you there.
That doesn't do anything at all.
It's like Reggie Bush losing his Heisman. Like, did he really lose his Heisman? He won it. There's pictures of him holding it.
Pete Carroll had to, they had to vacate victories from their resume. That doesn't make sense to me.
No.
USC, I'm talking about.
About Bush and that Heisman season and that championship game against Texas that they lost to Vince Young. One of the best football games I ever watched, by the way. One of the best college football games. The Rose Bowl was Texas USC. When I was in middle school. I want to say I was in 7th grade, maybe 8th grade, but that I stayed up late watching that one. But the point is, I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember Reggie Bush winning that Heisman. I remember that USC team. The wins aren't taken away. The Heisman's not taken away. We remember it. We saw it. It happened. Just because it's not in a history book, or even then, it's going to be in a history book. It's just going to be mentioned that they had these allegations. And as they happen more and more frequently in the NCAA, more and more people don't care as much. So I'm gonna say we can't possibly say whether we know 9 games was impactful enough. I have nothing against Mr. Boeheim. I don't even really know what went wrong. I don't even know entirely what he did. But I think I raise a pretty good question when I say what specifics occurred and what exactly is going on in other NCAA programs. I just think that the temptation has gotten too large to make profit off of these kids. And frankly, I may sound like an old geezer, but it's true. You know, it's gotten too out of control, in my opinion.
But the reason why he was suspended is because they were pretty much using the philosophy that Roger Goodell used in the NFL, and they said ignorance was not an excuse. There's no clear-cut evidence in terms of him facilitating or him assisting in the misconduct of the program, but they're saying you weren't compliant enough, or you failed to promote, and the direct quote is, the head basketball coach failed in his responsibilities to promote an atmosphere of compliance. And that just is vague in itself. Like, how do you measure whether or not he promoted an atmosphere of compliance? Like, it's nebulous, in my opinion. So I think the 9-game suspension was indeed warranted, and I thought it was harsh. But, like I said, it's warranted, and you can, in retrospect, say, oh, yeah, it didn't really affect Syracuse in any manner, but as I outlined it, it actually did, and it almost cost them a tournament bid.
I guess it's semantics at the end of the day. Yeah, it affected them. Yes, they didn't. They almost didn't make the tournament. And yes, it's basically why they were a 10 seed. But I'm looking at the bigger picture, and I'm saying that did it impact them enough? Was the punishment severe enough? As Bane says in Batman, your punishment must be more severe. Does it need to be more severe? We don't know. At the end of the day, we don't know, and I'm speculating. But I challenge the whole notion that everything's fine and dandy in Syracuse and other NCAA programs, because I cringe at how large it's gotten. I cringe when I see 71,500 seats available to people to watch a basketball game. And
why do you cringe at that?
It's too much. You can't even see the game from half those seats.
But it's about the experience.
How is it a good experience to not be able to see what you pay for?
Just being in that atmosphere, and it's to each his own. Like, you can say, oh, it's not a good experience for me because I can't see the game, but there are thousands of people who just enjoy being in that
would be a better atmosphere? That Houston, 71,500 people at Energy Stadium in Houston, or Madison Square Garden?
But I said, it's subjective. There's not everyone is there because they're diehard college basketball fans. They wouldn't be there to say that they were at the Final Four. They witnessed.
I get why people are there. What would be a better experience as a basketball fan?
For me?
Madison Square
Garden.
Yeah, I think most basketball fans would say Madison Square Garden.
But you can't really defend. Well, yes, most basketball fans. But when you're talking about, what you said, 71,000 people? Is that the number you gave?
Yeah, 71,500 people.
Yeah, you can't really gauge the pulse of everyone's interest level. You can't really definitively answer that question.
Right, and I'm sure the NCAA doesn't care about the pulse of the interest level. They just care about the fact that people are sitting there at the arena. And if they're going for the experience, I get it. People do that. But that's for a football field. That's for a 120-yard by 52-yard viewing of a field. You know what I'm saying? Pretty sure I got my math right. Yeah, 120 by 52 yards. That's a football field. A basketball court is nowhere close. I'm sorry.
I just don't understand why you're so vociferous.
I'm hung up on the fact that people need a Space Hubble telescope to watch a basketball game. But I don't want to stay too hung up on it. I want to talk about Alex Rodriguez a little bit, because we mentioned drug testing policies with Syracuse and whether they cross that line or whether even kids are juicing. You know, we don't really know. But obviously, Alex Rodriguez, he's at 687 home runs. He needs 27 to surpass Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth is at 714, obviously. And I recently watched a movie with my girlfriend, Rachel Cohen, who's listening right now, actually, and with her and her family. Tyreek, feel free to say hi to Rachel if you want.
Hey, Rachel and Rachel's family. Never met you before. But you got an awesome boyfriend.
Oh, well, that's kissing up to the host. That's a foul. Anyway.
Kissing up to the host that ripped me on Friday.
Yeah.
We won't even get into that.
Yeah, we won't get into that. But I watched this movie with her called The Program, and it's about Lance Armstrong. And it wasn't anything I didn't really already know, but it was an eye-opening, specific outline of everything that happened with Lance Armstrong. The fact that he pretty much self-created his own cancer diagnosis by doping. The fact that he had a whole team helping him dope to win 7 consecutive Tour de France's. And the fact that he continued to dope after it caused cancer. He was able to raise $53 million for cancer that he ironically self-created. It's really awkward considering the fact that he's pretty much a fraud, but he still raised $53 million for cancer. I might even have that number. It might have been $153 million. I'm not sure because everybody had those bracelets. So I'll double-check the money. But the point is he made a lot of money for cancer research, and everyone views him as pretty much a fraud now. So that just brings me to my point about A-Rod, who A-Rod was hung out to dry. Horrible press. Totally hated. And then he has one good year where he still produces, and you know, everyone assumes he's clean now. You know, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I really don't care. But he's producing and he's helping the Yankees. At the end of the day, is that all people care about, Tyreek? Does it bother you that he got caught?
It doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm a diehard Yankees fan. So any way he's contributing to the Yankees' success is going to put a smile on my face. I actually like A-Rod. He came out and he displayed a level of contrition that I think was genuine. He realized he made a mistake. He made actually a myriad of mistakes. And maybe he's never going to be able to 100% get over it in the court of public opinion. But the best cure to it all is producing and winning baseball games. And he helped the Yankees do that, hitting 30 home runs, 80-plus RBIs, and the Yankees getting that playoff berth, although they were ultimately eliminated in the wild-card round. But he was a significant contributing factor last season, and I think he'll have more of the same this year.
On the topic of winning baseball games, I agree with you. At the end of the day, that's what people care about the most. But seriously, at what point do we say enough is enough? Because we're talking about Babe Ruth, one of the most iconic baseball players in the history of the game. Does him surpassing that number bother you at all?
No, because when you look at baseball history or any sports history, and you talk about A-Rod and what he may or may not be able to do this year as it pertains to passing Babe Ruth, we know that the whole historical context is going to be different, right? We don't really know what happened back in Babe Ruth's days and whether or not they were accusing or what have you. But from what we do know and what has been revealed to us, those guys were playing A-Rod as dirty. So anytime you have that disparity in the character, we're always going to look upon Babe Ruth as someone who's iconic, as someone who is one of the greatest of all time. And then when you look at A-Rod, you're going to think of cheater and what have you. So I think the historical context is different, and it doesn't really bother me.
I'd say you're in the minority about it not bothering you. I mean, a lot of people, myself included, really only consider Hank Aaron as the true home run king of baseball. Obviously, Barry Bonds passed him, but there's all that fluff about him surrounding his steroid use. So, to me, it's upsetting when it gets to this point. But if I were a Yankee fan, I would say this. He did his time. The guy who was suspended for an eternity, and he comes back and he plays this well, you almost have to tip your hat to him. I know a lot of Yankee fans that are upset they even gave him the chance to come back. They didn't just pay him to go home because, you know, that's happened before with the Yankees. But to me, it's tampering with a fine line. And I just think that winning games is one thing, but challenging baseball record books is another. And I guess I am more on your side than now that I think about it because, quite frankly, what can you do? You know, you can't tell him not to break it. You can't. He's no right to be banned from baseball at this point. He's followed the strictest drug policy in the history of baseball. So, frankly, I guess if he does beat it, good for him. But a better question is, will he beat it?
I think he will. The Yankees, first of all, coming off that year-long suspension, they're not going to just pay him 3 years, $60 million.
They could. Sure they could. It's the Yankees.
Just go away. They're not going to do it. It doesn't make sense for them to do that.
No, it didn't make sense, but I know all I was saying is a lot of Yankee fans wanted that.
Yeah, and I disagree because why not just bring him in and see what he's capable of doing? Now, if he stinks, then you can do that, but you don't do it with the absence of knowing whether or not he can still produce, whether or not he can still give you quality at bat. I think that would just be dumb. So, back to the historical context point, it doesn't really bother me because what is being upset going to do? Is it going to change anything? Not at all.
No, I hear you.
You can take it with a grain of salt. You can say, like, you can have that opinion that you have. I think Hank Aaron is the true all-time leader in home runs in all of baseball. You can have those types of opinions. No one's going to criticize or ridicule you for that.
Yeah.
But being upset that Barry Bonds stands at the top of the list statistically and A-Rod's going to pass Babe Ruth, it's not going to really do anything. Because, to be quite honest with you, A-Rod never failed the drug test, right? The only reason why he was suspended
and this
whole investigation happened was because of the whole thing with Anthony Bosch and how he wasn't paying his employees and what have you. Anthony Bosches are there around in baseball?
Getting
away with juicing and not getting caught because they're not failing drug tests.
I don't mean to dismiss you, but you've had that rant with me before, not on this talk show, so I shouldn't have been rude. I apologize. But I understand your point, but it's such a relevant thing, especially for me after seeing the movie with Lance Armstrong because, frankly, it's so easy to get around a drug test. It's not that hard. So it's saying he never failed a drug test, that was his go-to line in the movie if you actually happen to happened to see it at some point. His go-to line is, "I've never failed a drug test," and the media eats that up because of course they will. But frankly, it's to me, if you know he took it, which we do, what does it really matter if he never failed a drug test? Yes, it was probably botched from his personal rights, and that's why he wanted to sue the league and all that stuff, and he did sue the league, but that's a whole rant for another day. And I just want to give the folks an update on the Mets game. Bottom of the third, before, the Mets had Michael Conforto on first base, and he tried to steal second, got thrown out. Really good throw by Salvador Perez. Just got the tag down. And now Eric Hosmer, the king of the ground ball. Two ground balls in this game, obviously in the perfect spot because it's the Kansas City Royals. It's what they do best, little small ball plays where they run the bases like madmen. Now they got runners at the corner with no out. Matt Harvey's in a pickle in the bottom of the fourth. But I just can't fathom how amazing the Royals are at ground balls. The one thing you're not supposed to do as a baseball player. You're supposed to hit the ball in the outfield for crying out loud. But this entire team is just so good at putting the ball through the hole, and especially when they have runners on. I think maybe they practice it. I don't know. I have a theory. They practice how to hit really good ground balls.
And this is the same team, fresh off back-to-back World Series appearances, fresh off winning their first World Series title since 1985. This same team, on our Sportocracy pod last Friday, you said, we're done.
Well, hold on now. I did not say they were done. I said I don't think they're going to win the division again. I'll stand by that. I could end up eating my words, but in April, for what it's worth, I don't think the Royals are going to win the division again. I think it's hard. I think it's hard to repeat.
So you think it's hard to repeat as a division winner? You should know pretty well how that goes in the NL East with the Atlanta Braves, what they were able to do for 14 years.
Oh, 14 years. You want to talk about the 90s, sure. But I also know very well how hard it is for the Mets to repeat as division winners. How many times has that happened in my life? Very few. My point.
The Royals are pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think the Royals are pretty good.
I'm not saying they'll go back to the World Series, but I think they will definitely win this division again pretty easily.
I'm not sure. I don't want to write off the Tigers or the Indians. That's all I really meant by that. And I like to be outlandish on April. You know this. You know I always like to say the opposite of general opinion because it's not fun when you say the same thing that everyone else is saying.
You like to disagree with me.
I like to disagree with everybody. It's my thing. Ask anybody. Ask Rachel. She's the one listening. She'll tell you.
You should tweet at Sportopoly Pod or something like that.
I like to disagree and tweet. Kansas City Royals are now up 2-0. Sack fly. I think it was Perez that hit that one. Kane scored. No, it might have been Morales. Excuse me. Kendry Morales.
Yeah, it was Morales.
Yeah, Kendry Morales hit that pop fly. 2-0. Mets trying to get out of this one. They could use a double play to end this inning and keep the Mets in this game. What's up?
Quick point, because I don't want my point to be misconstrued. I wasn't.
Well, I would never do that. You know that.
I wasn't defending A-Rod because of his, the fact that he never failed a drug test. I was saying was, I think the sport is still contaminated with steroid users. So while we're going to kill A-Rod, and rightfully so, there are a bunch of guys who probably are guilty, are guilty and have never been charged because they never failed a test.
I hear you. So I got to wrap this show up. I got 5 minutes left. I'm going to leave you on because you've been so good to me. I'm going to leave you on to the very end of this rendition of Sports Talk 1240. But previously, you and I were talking about Goose Gossage and Bryce Harper. There was all that fluff about Goose Gossage calling Yoenis Cespedes and Bryce Harper nerds and how they think they're ruining the game. And there was a few choice words that he mentioned in that rant. And then Bryce Harper said baseball is tired. He wrote that little bit for, what was it on, ESPN or Medium? Might have been on Medium.
No, he wrote it for Derek Jeter's website.
The Players Tribune. Okay. So he wrote for the Players Tribune. Thank you. And he felt that baseball is tired and that we need to be able to celebrate. He feels strongly that it's just all in good fun. And you've always expressed that side of the argument. First time I heard it, I was like, why is this a story? Old people are old. Young people are young. What else is new? But you brought to my attention that maybe less and less people are watching baseball. And statistically, there's evidence to suggest that less people are watching it now than before. And I don't think baseball has to do anything to really try and fix it. I think things are kind of natural. People that want to watch baseball will watch, and people that don't will. The Mets successfully turned 2 to get out of the inning, ended 2-0. Royals heading into the fifth. And I just to wrap things up, I don't think it's baseball's place to try and rewrite who's going to watch and who's not going to watch. Obviously, they want to get viewers. I'm not an idiot. I understand they want to maximize people watching. But baseball and sports in general, to me, are so great if it's an exclusive type of environment. You know what I'm saying? Do you get what I'm saying?
Not really.
Let me articulate it really quickly because we've got 3 minutes. I just feel that when the people that truly care about the team and the sport they're watching are at the game, the ones watching the games, it's better. And I know I may sound like an idiot because you think, well, that's everybody at a game. No, it's not. You go to a football game, it's 50% fantasy football viewers. And then I'd say another 25% people that just want to get hammered and are really annoying. And then I'd say 25% people that actually care about the team. And what do the Giants or any team that I happen to be viewing or going to really care? Because they're getting their money. And you're on the side that it's a business and they got to get their money. But I'm on the side of keeping the tradition of the sport alive. So maybe I'm an old fart like Goose, but that's how I feel.
I think it is baseball's place to improve the quality of the sport by whatever means necessary. And that can be said about any sport, basketball.
But you and
football.
I are baseball fans. What's wrong with baseball?
So baseball has employed some strategies in the past to improve that quality. We've seen the lowering of mounds. You've seen the Mets bringing fences. And this is a laundry list of tactics that the sport has used in order to improve. Now, as I outlined before, according to stats, according to attendance, according to ratings and all the studies, we've seen that the demographic of baseball is, 55 years of age. That's what you're appealing to. So you're having issues now appealing to that younger generation. And you need that fraction of this fan base to be interested in your sport unless you're going to lose popularity. Now, once again, baseball is doing well with the money it's making and what have you. But I think we'll see a concerted effort, and we're already seeing it, trying to decrease the amount of time between pitches and all these other tactics to kind of make the game shorter. But we'll see that baseball realizes, and they're already realizing, that you got to get that younger generation involved.
Tyreek, thank you, my man. Thank you for taking some time for Sports Talk 1240. Same place, same time Friday for Sportopoly Pod, because this show is brought to you by Sportopoly Pod at Sportopoly Pod. That's SportopoloyPod on Twitter. You might want to rewind that and listen to that again. But thank you, Tyreek. I'm going to end it on the stanza I read before from the baseball poem by Bill Burns. And so you must go, once again, to feel and hold on to it, to savor and be hurt by it, to jump for joy and cry in deep despair, to make it a part of you before it's gone or you are. Thanks for listening. Have a good night and happy opening day.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.